4 o'clock, so I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. I'd like to thank everyone for being here with us this afternoon. Melissa, can I get a roll call?
Commissioner Carr?
Here.
Commissioner LeMay?
Here.
Commissioner Garland?
Here.
Commissioner Miller?
Here.
And excuse today is Chair Mason.
Yeah, so we have 4 present, 1 excuse. That's a quorum. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next on our agenda this afternoon is call to audience. Do we have any audience members that wish to address the commission? Not seeing any, and I didn't receive any blue cards, so I'll move on. I'd like to welcome our new commission members, Matt and Joyce. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Moving to staff liaison comments here. There were a couple items to note. There was a lengthy council meeting this past Wednesday evening. A couple presentations on tonight's agenda were also on that agenda, namely the ACFR presentation and the Golf AUP, agreed upon procedures engagement. Also, there was a public hearing regarding a rezoning request. Council voted unanimously to deny that request, which impacted the northeast corner of Rancho Vistoso and Tangerine. There was a separate item that impacted the other across the way on Rancho Vistoso as well, but that item was pulled. Given the results of the first item. Another public hearing was held establishing zoning and standards requirements for mobile food courts, and that passed. And then council authorized a contingency reallocation in the general fund to assist in funding the 50th anniversary parade and celebration. That contingency reallocation was a little over $105,000. And then finally, the next council meeting, which is scheduled for February 7th, as the January 24th meeting was canceled. So that was those were kind of the items that came out of the last council meeting. Additionally, our finance team is off and running this calendar year. We've got each year in January, we've got W-2s to process and 1099s, kind of some calendar year-endish type stuff and activities. And so we're busy working on those. And then our commission chair is out this evening recovering from a medical procedure, and our vice chair position is currently vacant. So that's why I'm filling in as chair until we get a chair and vice chair elected, hopefully this evening, which is on tonight's agenda. With all that said, we'll move on into our regular agenda item this evening, or regular agenda this evening. Item number one is review and approval of the November 21st, 2023 regular session meeting minutes. And if you have a second to review those, if those look like they're in line, I'd ask for a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
We have a motion on the floor by Jerry to approve the minutes. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Jennifer. A motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? And that motion passes 4-0. Next on our agenda this evening or this afternoon, discussion and possible action on electing a chair and vice chair for the Budget and Finance Commission for the upcoming year. I did mention earlier that our chair is currently recovering from a medical procedure. He did express that he would be willing to serve as chair again if that's the commission's pleasure. Although, you know, if there are others that wish to serve as the commission chair, you know, if you just want to make that known, and then we can have a motion and then maybe a second and a vote and then move on to the vice chair election. So is there a motion to be chair, or do any of you wish to be chair, be considered for chair of the Budget and Finance Commission?
No.
Okay. Is there a motion on the floor
For what?
But to, well, does someone want to, propose a motion for a chair?
Yes. To retain our current president?
Well, yeah, to elect Mike Mason as chair for the Budget and Finance Commission for an additional. Okay, we have a motion second. By Jerry, second by Joyce. Any further discussion on this item? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Okay. Yeah. Passes 4-0. Next is the election for the vice chair. Are there any commission members that would be interested in serving as vice chair for the upcoming year?
I will.
Okay, Jennifer's interested. Is there any other interest among the commission members? Okay. Is there a motion that someone would? Okay, Jerry would like to move that Jennifer would serve as vice chair. Is there a second? Thank you, Joyce. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? And that that motion passes 4-0. With that, I will cede the floor to Jennifer. This is your meeting.
Oh, boy, and I don't have the agenda in front of me. Thank you. Okay. Number three.
Presentation and discussion of Town Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, Single Audit and Alternative Expenditure Limitation Report for the fiscal year ending for June 30th, 2023.
Yeah, so good afternoon again, commissioners. Dave Gephardt, I am Chief Financial Officer for the town. I'll just kind of lead into this item. This is our annual comprehensive financial report, which is prepared by town staff. Annually, we have to prepare this to stay in compliance with Arizona revised statutes. We have our auditor here, Brian Hemmerly from Baker Tilly. He has a short presentation, but just a couple items to note for you this afternoon. And I noted these in the council meeting as well. This last year, the town finished the year in very strong financial condition. We increased, I'll point to the pages here, we increased our net position by a little over $14.6 million. So that's very positive. Total net position for the town ending at the end of the fiscal year was almost $332 million. Going back 10 years, because we have a schedule in the statistical section of the report that kind of tracks through the past 10 years of performance in our net position, total net position increased from about $231 million to about $332 million. So it increased about $10 million per year, or a total of $100 million over that 10-year period. I would like to emphasize the town's in very strong financial shape. There are some challenges moving forward that we're aware of that we'll be addressing, as there always are. But we've been on a good path here, a good path of sustainable growth in our net position. The net position, and just to clarify, so that we're all on the same page here, when I talk about net position, we're really talking about total assets and deferred outflows, less total liabilities and deferred inflows. So basically, in a nutshell, it's assets less liabilities. So a good, strong number there of $332 million. We're pleased with those results. With that, I'll turn it over to Brian Hemmerly, his firm, again, Baker Tilly. They performed the audit on the town financial statements, issued an unqualified opinion on those statements, and so he has a short presentation that hopefully we can bring up on the screen for you this afternoon. Do you want me to apologize for the? This is not our normal setup here, so things are a little bit different.
Well, while Mr. Gephardt is getting set up there, I'll go ahead and
And just introduce myself again. My name is Brian Emmerly. I'm the lead audit partner with Baker Tilly for the public sector government audit insurance here in Arizona, the state of Arizona. Our firm does a lot of cities, towns, state entities, special taxing districts, things of that nature. And, of course, we're all over the country, so we have resources from all over the country for our public sector audit and assurance niche. This year's audit went very well. It was a very successful audit. One thing that I always like to point out at this particular town is that your town finance department prepares their own financial statements. That's pretty rare in the United States, or especially the state of Arizona. The knowledge you need to be able to prepare a document this size is hard to find. So oftentimes that is a not a test service that the audit firm has to prepare for the their auditee. So it's nice for us because we can give a really good opinion on whether or not these financial statements are materially correct. And going into that, you did receive a clean opinion, an unmodified or unqualified opinion on these financial statements. We give reasonable assurance that the financial statements are materially correct. We do not give absolute assurance. I have to point that out every time. Absolute assurance would require that we test every transaction at the town. In order to do something like that, it would be very costly and take a very long time to do. We do, however, look through your internal controls, the town's internal controls. We test those controls, the key controls. We observe those non-key controls. We also do statistically valid sampling for specific detailed test work throughout the town for different transaction cycles that are significant to the town. So with that said, again, you did receive a clean opinion on that particular report. The second report we issue is what we call in the industry a yellow book report. It's a government audit and generally accepted government auditing standards report. This report is related to compliance with laws, contracts, grant agreements, debt covenants, things of that nature. So throughout the course of our audit, we did not find anything that we felt was materially out of compliance. We do have, again, a direct material requirement to make sure it's direct material to the town. So little immaterial things. A good example might be there was a year at one town that I audited where the senior citizen center didn't spend the food money quite correctly, but it was so trivial to the town and to the federal government that they basically just said, do better next time. So those kinds of things might be occurring. As far as material items of the town, nothing came up during our audit for the compliance-related audit report. By the time I'm done speaking, he'll have the...
I'm sorry. It always, like, okay. The new computer, you know, signing into a new computer always is a challenge because it's, like, it's got to find you.
Well, it's fine, actually. I've got it all up here. The third report we have is related to your federal funding. So the town, historically, from my understanding, hasn't always had a special report, single audit report on federal funding. The federal government requires whenever the town spends more than $750,000 of federal monies that the auditors do a specific audit on what's called a major program. And major programs are calculated different ways, and the federal government tells us this is what we want you to calculate as major programs. This year's major program for the town of Moreno Valley was the COVID-19 State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund. That fund spent $3.6 million this year. Overall, the town spent $4.1 million of federal funding. So a big chunk, the vast majority, really, of the federal funding this year was spent in that COVID-19 State and Fiscal Recovery Fund. We did provide an unqualified and a clean opinion on that as well. And in that particular instance, the federal government tells us specifically what they want us to test to make sure you're in compliance. And that comes from the Department of Treasury, the United States Department of Treasury. And the items we tested in accordance with the Department of Treasury did not yield any findings. So you got a clean audit report for your federal grant monies this year. And the last audit report that I'm going to bring up is...
There it is.
Sorry, it's just the expenditure limitation report. So the state of Arizona requires that the town spends less than their expenditure limitation. There are two types of expenditure limitations. There's one that's provided by the Economic Estimates Commission expenditure. It's a commission that the state has. The state commission said the town of Oro Valley's limit should be $151.4 million this year. However, your town had a special voter-approved alternative limitation of, and you can see that on the slide now, of $147.7 million, which actually, it just occurred to me, is actually lower than the Economic Estimate Commission, which doesn't tend to be the case. Usually you go to the voters to approve a higher limit. So you're actually, your limit is less than what this Economic Commission has, which is great. It's more conservative. The total amount spent that is subject to that limitation is $115.7 million. So you're well underneath your limitation of $31.9 million this year. We did review all the information that goes into that limitation calculation, and it has been reported as a clean opinion on that expenditure limitation report. It's been filed with the Auditor General's Office for the state of Arizona, which is due by the end of March, so well ahead of schedule, and we had no other issues with that. So, and you can see there on the last part of that slide is the single audit related to the $4.1 million I mentioned, the COVID-19 state and local fiscal recovery fund monies that were spent this year. So, that is my report on all four of the opinions we gave for the town. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions about the ACFR or the audit process or...
Oh, question for you, Dick. How much time do you spend here at City Hall actually embedded with David's financial team?
Yeah, absolutely. Acting Chair Carr, member Gerald. We spend a portion of time in the summer, usually a couple days. Sometimes we come out. Sometimes we're able to perform some of that remotely where we test control. So that's our risk assessment. We go through the process of determining what are the risks of each major transaction cycle. Then we come back, usually end of September, sometimes early October for a week, and we perform the heavy load, the big lift of detailed test work. We go to all the different departments, water departments, talk to who we need to talk to, get the detail we need. And then the third part of the audit, we wrap up remotely from our office. And that's really just reviewing and auditing the actual financial statements to make sure what we have in these statements match all the data we audited in September and October. And if there's any discrepancies between what they have here and what we've audited already, then we'd work that out in the remaining October, November months. We did issue, I believe, in early December this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, early December. So there's, a little bit of back and forth between when we come out early October and when we actually issue early December.
Thank you.
Yep.
So I did have a question about the AFR. And I wasn't able to peruse the full thing yet. Were there any new GASB statements that the town implemented?
Okay. Go ahead. You can take a stab at it, and then I'll add to it.
Commissioner Carr, Commissioner Joyce. Yes, there were some new statements this year. The first and probably most important one is what's called the software-based IT arrangement, information technology arrangements. And the town did have a few instances of that. That is very similar to leases, in which the any IT arrangement that expands for more than 1 year that's been signed as a contract, that is an exchange or exchange-like transaction, what that means is you don't give them a dollar and they give you the right to use their software for the next 5 years. That would not be exchange-like. It would have to be a value that's commensurate with the actual software being provided. Those types of transactions now have to be booked as an asset on the, I'm going to call it the balance sheet for governmental purposes. It's called something else. An asset, almost like a capital asset, no different than really this building we're sitting in. And then a debt line item, which we call subscription liability. And the asset is amortized over the period of the software arrangement, say it's 5 years, and the liability is paid over that usually the same period of time, 5 years. So those two tend to be pretty close to each other as they get amortized down to zero over the course of the 5 years. That's the heaviest new GASB. There were some other new GASBs, but they weren't there weren't any that needed to be implemented for this town. The SPEDA, we call it SPEDA, or the software-based IT arrangement. That was the one that was the biggest.
And I'll just add, that was a heavy lift on our staff. We had well north of 70 separate contracts, IT contracts and arrangements that we had to review the agreements to determine whether it was material, whether it needed to be reported, what we needed to do with it, whether we could scope it out, whether it needed to be included, and so forth. So that was a major lift on the part of our staff. Very time-intensive process, if you can imagine. Just trying to find all the agreements in the town, number one, because you would think and hope that they're all kind of centrally located. But sometimes, especially on some of the longer, some of the contracts that we've had for a while,
some kind can be kind of difficult to kind of run down and track down. But with all that said, we did review the contracts, did a very thorough inventory of those. We had an inventory, but then trying to find them and then went through the calculations to determine again whether they needed to be reported or not recorded, according to the new standard or not. So yes, it was time intensive, but moving forward, now that the heavy lift is done, it should be a matter more of maintenance. It shouldn't be as time intensive for our team, but this first year it definitely was. So.
And just to add to that, as auditors, we obviously take all the contracts that they've deemed to be scoped in under the standard. We recalculate to make sure we agree with the calculations. But then further, we do a test of completeness to make sure that they haven't missed anything. And so we do scan through every area we think might be hiding a software-based contract, and we didn't find any additional contracts that we thought needed to be recorded or reported.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Agenda item number four,
presentation and possible discussion of town golf engagement performed by Baker Tilly.
Okay, we do have this one.
Yeah, this one should come up a little bit quicker here. Same email.
Okay, so late in July 2023, we had a discussion with town management regarding the operations of the golf course and some additional procedures that they felt would be necessary or appropriate to take a look at that might be a bit more detailed than what we would get in the financial statement audit. So this particular report, this project, was what we call an agreed upon procedures report, and we can go to the next slide. So the
guess it doesn't want to do that. The thing is just a little bit glitchy. Okay, there we go.
Okay, so the scope period we have for this particular project was the fiscal year in June 30, 2023. We did have to have a scope year. Agreed upon procedure, the definition there at the bottom of that bullet point is an at-test engagement, which we perform specific procedures, specific being that we can't go outside what's specifically detailed in the required procedures. On the subject matter report and reports the findings without providing opinion or conclusion, the subject matter may be financial or non-financial. So with that, the next slide you'll see has all four, kind of 5-3A is a fifth one we added in. When it comes to agreed upon procedures, we don't really have a materiality, so to speak. So we have to provide all things we find, even if it's off $100. And so that's another reason management might want to choose to do something like this, is to take a closer look into one specific operation of the town that might not have that the scope can get a lot closer, a lot deeper. So we'll go through each one of these. Each one of these has its own slide. Number one, the next slide. This procedure was to select a sample of 40 expenditures and determine the appropriate classification and to evaluate whether the expenditure was appropriately allocated the town's golf course and not some other golf course. So Indigo is the name of the third-party management company that manages the golf courses for the town of Oro Valley. And Indigo does this for a number of other cities and towns across the country, as well as private entities throughout the country. One of the concerns was perhaps there could be expenditures that maybe get allocated to the town of Oro Valley or their golf course that isn't really one of their expenditures. Maybe it's for another golf course under another operating entity. We noted all invoices that we tested were indeed accurately reported for Oro Valley, either addressed to the town itself or to the town's golf course. And in reviewing the detail of each one of those invoices, we did not see anything that, something wasn't delivered to Scottsdale. And we were like, well, you don't have a golf course in Scottsdale. So nothing like that occurred in the 40 transactions that we tested. So no findings on this particular procedure. Number two is Benford's analysis. Mr. Benford was a physicist back in 1936. He wrote a paper on the natural occurrence of the first digit in numbers. This is a widely used test by auditors and other industries, really, to determine if there is potentially any fraud. This tends to work pretty well for large groups of data. In this case, the golf course was a perfect source for that. You can go to the next slide to see the graph we have here. So Benford says that the purple bar there is how often naturally the first digit would occur in a sample set of data. The blue or I guess indigo colored bar is your town's golf course for 2022 and 2023. Standard practice in the audit industry is to evaluate anything that is over 3% of a variance. In 2022, the two digit had more than a 3% variance larger than what Benford's mathematical analysis would indicate would be appropriate. What we did is we went in, we looked at the detail of all two-digit transactions and found that there were 39 transactions related to Comcast and the city's own utilities, water and electric utilities, to the golf course. When we pulled those transactions out of the data set, the two-digit was right in line with what Benford would expect. Usually when you're over on one digit, you're under on other digits. And so it's appropriate to see some of these 6, 7, 8, 9 digits in 2022 were under what Benford would have expected, but none more than 3%. And then you'll see in 2023, everything was pretty much right in line. There wasn't any major discrepancies greater than 3%. Had we found any other digits, of course, we would have dug into those digits and looked at the detail of those particular transactions. So in this case, it was just the Comcast and the utilities with the city that or the town that we looked at, and all of them were officially for the golf course. There wasn't like a Comcast bill for someone's home in there that we found. Procedure three, we performed an extended analysis on the golf course revenue in relation to different types of tee times. There are three types of tee times that the point of sale system, the cash register of sorts software, is using. And those three types of tee times are green fee members, green fee outings, and green fee public. The members are memberships. The outings are things like organizations that come and say, we want to do a shotgun tournament. So we'd like to rent the course for, you know, the first 6 hours of the day, something of that nature. That would be the outings. And then the public is just your standard public individual coming in to play a round of golf. And you can see on the next slide, this is a lot of words, but here's the graphs for you. People tend to like to see the graphs. The membership had seen a nice increase from 2023. The public had a little bit of a decrease, and the outings were pretty much in line. We found that the membership prices and public prices went up enough to create a positive revenue increase from 2022 to 2023, and we did not see anything unusual year over year with these particular green fees.
Yeah, I ask a question about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you do any comparisons of our golf course with other golf courses for particular kind of ratios of the
fees? Yeah, and I think that's later in my slides. But yes, we do look. Actually, I think it is for this next one. So we do take a look at some of the differences between 2022 and 2023 rounds played to get an idea. Is there just a really unusual change in rounds played for your town as there is for other towns and cities. And we do tribal entities with golf courses in the state as well. And we found that your golf course was pretty much right in line, if not honestly a bit better than a lot of golf courses in the state. So the ones we audited at least. You'll see from November through June, there was a pretty good increase with the exception of January and February, which, we looked into whether or not that was anything specific to your town. And the one thing that came up was there was a 5-day rental of the, I believe it was disc golf.
Yeah, the Push Ridge.
Push Ridge had a disc. And in the past year, they had only 2 days where they rented out Push Ridge for the disc golf. And that can take quite a few rounds off the list there. And then, of course, the weather was an impact as well. Next slide. Procedure three, additionally, we computed an average green fee for the months. So we found that on the left is your El Conquistador, on the right is your Push Ridge Golf Course, and the average fee per month. And we compared this as well to other municipal golf courses and found that these are right in line with what we're seeing across the state of Arizona. There are certain differences with you know, some of our Scottsdale Paradise Valley type golf courses. But for the most part, this is pretty much in line with the other municipal golf courses in the state of Arizona. And you can see, again, the outing fees were a bit higher than the public fees, which was expected based on what you charge for, you know, renting out the course and shutting it down to everybody else. 3A was added later, so this was a sample of 25 receipts. I think we actually ended up testing 32 just to make sure, and we did have a couple findings in this particular area. So there were 15 credit card transactions, four of which had a difference between the point of sale system and the bank deposit that was identified by the third-party management company. We noted that the deposit in the bank was higher than what was in the point of sale report, by about $647. So again, there really is no materiality. We have to report everything out on this. Those four transactions took place in November 2022. There were two credit card transactions that we couldn't trace to the bank statement. One amount was $523 in November, and the other was $414 in August of 2022. The third-party management company, Indigo, indicated that the credit card transactions can hit the bank for different amounts as well as include any potential refunds. So what's happening there, and this tends to be the case with credit cards. Credit cards batch at midnight every night. The information that you get when you sell a round might get captured in that batch, but then refunds and other types of transactions that may occur, changes in the fees, for instance, if you book online and come in later, those all can occur at different times on the bank statement. And what we found is those items actually did clear the bank at a later date. So this is purely for credit cards. We didn't put this on the slide, and I wish we would have. Every cash transaction we tested was 100% on with what was put in the bank. So if somebody walked in and paid $40 for a round with cash and it went in the cash register, all of that did make it to the bank. We had no discrepancies with cash. It was really just credit cards. There were two wire transfers that were selected. There weren't any findings with these wire transfers. There was one transfer out and one transfer in. The transfer in was from the town to help with some of the payroll and AP during that time. And then the transfer out was a small transfer out of $168 to a vendor. There aren't deposit slips for wire transfers. It's just your usual wire transfer. I'm sure you're familiar with wire transfers. Next slide. Our last procedure four, we did take a look at the bank reconciliations per month, and we had some small findings here. For the 3 out of 5 months of bank reconciliations that we tested, we noted a difference in the final bank rec calculated by Indigo on their general ledger. There was a difference in October for $142, and it again appeared in November for $142.50. That is a reconciling item that eventually reconciled itself out in later months. And then there was another one in December for $4,256.28. We did take a look at June 2023, and we found that all three of those reconciling items had reconciled out before the end of the year. So we felt that although they reconciled out, it would be good if Indigo could do a better job documenting some of this formally. So we did ask Indigo and the town to provide formal documentation and to review the bank reconciliations monthly with the finance department here at the town, and to maintain that proper reporting documentation and have somebody sign or initial that they've reviewed it from the town as well. We hope that this will help get Indigo to do a little better job of recognizing their outstanding deposits outstanding and checks outstanding deposits in transit. We believe that'll help remedy that situation going forward. And my understanding is since we've reported this to management, they've already started the process of getting closer look at their bank reconciliations on a monthly basis. And I think, yep, that is my presentation on our golf AUP project. Are there any questions?
I have a couple.
Sure, yeah.
Can we go back to slide 11? So on the cash receipts, that number one, there was some discrepancies. Was it just in the credit cards?
Yes.
And it's all been taken care of now, right?
Yeah. So Indigo did not have the ability to reconcile specifically some of these differences, but we were able to determine that they were because of refunds. And later in the month that batched with the system. So there's credit cards, there's always these small differences, usually based because of the refund situation.
Okay, so since I'm new here and I'm trying to understand, so does the third party, they manage their own bank account, or is it under the town's? Is it your bank account?
It's a joint account.
It's a joint account. Okay.
Yes.
So they do all the deposits into it, and they pay their own vendors through that bank account.
Correct.
Okay. Just trying to understand how your processes work and then how your internal controls are over that.
Yeah, we have Vice Chair Commissioner Garland. We have access on a monthly basis to the bank statements. We were not getting those bank reconciliations on a monthly basis, so we were not aware, trying to match up ending balances per the bank reconciled balances and tracing those to or comparing those to month-end financial statements provided to us by Indigo. We were not able to do that. We do it on a year-end basis, but not on a monthly basis. So as we went through this, looked at these issues, we decided, that it's probably a good idea for us to look at these bank reconciliations on a monthly basis. We had the bank statements, but we weren't looking at the bank reconciliations. We weren't able to look at those reconciling items, the deposits in transit and the outstanding checks.
So do the transactions on the golf course flow into the town's general ledger on a monthly or daily, or do you just rely on the financial statements
they
provide?
Vice Chair Commissioner Garland, what we do is we get the month-end financial statements compiled by the contractor. They provide those to us, and we do a month-end journal entry, essentially, of the net of all of those transactions. So, that's, in a nutshell, we're not, doing individual transactions. We're just recording that, in aggregate on a monthly basis based upon the contractor financials.
So there's, no interface between their system to the towns?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And then on this particular audit, is this an annual or was this special?
Yeah, so good question, Vice Chair Commissioner Garland. So take a step back here as to why we took these steps. So we've been town staff and we've been hearing from the public both on kind of that pro golf component in our from our residents and then kind of the anti-golf component to our residents. We've been kind of hearing these voices out there in the community saying, okay, how do we, the pro golf is saying, well, results are actually better than what's being reported. The anti-golf saying, well, the results are actually worse than what's being reported. So we're kind of hearing this, and we have this review coming up of the Push Ridge course that council will be undertaking next month. Which is, that was something that was agreed to 3 years ago. So we have this review coming up, the Push Ridge course, and we just kind of wanted to know, okay, let's just, we have an audit, overall town audit of our financial statements. Let's take a deeper dive into golf and really see, let's take a look at the internal controls of our contractor. Let's document those. Let's test those. Let's have our auditor do it so it's not just town staff, but we've got this independent voice that is not invested one way or the other because town staff, quite frankly, didn't want to get accused of, we are trying to cook something or trying to craft an argument one way or the other. We just wanted this independent, what's happening out there in terms of the golf function and how our contractor is handling it? Are there any issues that we need to address? And we haven't really taken a look at those for the past 3 or 4 years that Indigo's been our golf contractor. So we felt like it was time. It was something that the town manager authorized. And we engaged Baker Tilly, as Brian said, late July, started having some conversations as to what this might look like. It framed up very quickly, provided some direction to them, really trying to provide more comfort to the public as to how golf is being reported out there from a financial standpoint. So, and so it was, again, kind of got the clean opinion on our townwide financials. This was really kind of a separate, specialized, deeper dive into the golf activity, just trying to look for that comfort there. And if there was something that we needed to address, then we wanted to know, okay, let's address it. Let's figure that out and figure out how we need to address it. So thankfully, we didn't feel like the results of the deep dive necessitated anything really major or significant. There were no major findings. These findings are all pretty minor and I'll qualify as being insignificant. But, you know, we there are a couple little things we wanted to tighten up there, and the bank reconciliation item is certainly one of those.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, if I may add, this is not uncommon. You see this at cities and towns all over the state. They might have one item that might be a bit more of a hot-button topic with the citizens, and so they'll want an objective look at specifically the operations. These findings would never come up in a financial statement audit. They're trivial to the audit. So really, they wouldn't have known to begin doing some of this stuff without this type of project in place in the first place.
I have a few questions. So for the sample size, the 40, the 25 receipts, how much of the overall transaction is that? Like what percentage did you look at?
Vice Chair Carr, that's a great question. I don't have that information off the top of my head right now. We did come up with these sample sizes based on different statistically valid sampling charts that are used by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And we take a look to make sure if it's over a certain number, like for instance, it's over 250 transactions, it's well over 250 transactions in a year, to make sure that we're testing a certain amount. So less than 40 would have been inappropriate, less than 30 would have been inappropriate for this type of project. So we did help management in trying to come up with some of these sample sizes. As far as the specific percentage of the total population, I don't have that information off the top of my head, but I can go back and take a look and get it to you.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious. And then I know you said that this is a joint account to pay these bills out of. So I was curious about the wire. Is that normal practice for the town to pay vendors to pay your regular accounts payable via wire as opposed to a check or an ECH?
Yeah, so Vice Chair, members of the commission. So the wires, so there's a couple wires that they looked at, that Baker Tilly looked at. One was a wire in and one was a wire out. The wire out in terms of paying a vendor, I think that's not fairly common. It does happen occasionally. You know, even the town internally, our finance staff, we will occasionally use wires, but typically that's not our preferred approach because there's fees, bank fees that are associated with that. So we try to stay away from utilizing wires, and you know, try utilizing ACH and other means of paying our vendors. But in terms of the transfer, the transfers from our bank, our town operating account to the shared joint operating account that Indigo and the town have that helps them with their operations and paying their bills and so forth. Those transfers are fairly infrequent, I'll say, maybe three or four a year. And it really is need-based. It depends on, you know, there's definitely a cyclical nature to golf. So during those low months, you know, July, August, where it's hot and there's not a lot of golfers out there. So, you know, we're not bringing in a lot of golf revenue. You know, but we still got Indigo still has personnel that needs to be paid and operating costs and so forth. You know, that would be the purpose of making those transfers, you know, into Indigo's operating account. I'll say that, you know, we did kind of look at their joint account. We actually transferred money from the Indigo town joint account into the town operating account. I believe that was last January or February, which I think that was the first time ever, because we felt like there was excess cash in that joint account. We just thought, well, what's the need? What's the purpose of having excess cash? But then we ended up, as the cyclical nature of things, you know, progress. And I think this was actually a year and a half ago, if I'm remembering correctly. And then the cyclical nature of things, as cash got drawn down due to those hot summer months, and you know, not bringing in a lot of golf related revenues, then we ended up transferring that money back. And as we actually went through those transactions, I believe the net difference was, you know, maybe $50,000, which kind of sounds like a lot of money, but I think, and Wendy could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that initial transfer from the Indigo joint account into the town operating account was about $500,000. So we, you know, we made that $500,000 transfer to kind of draw down that joint account, and then we ended up having to transfer it through several transfers back into that account just to, again, kind of get through those lower months of golf activity and revenues. So,
thank you.
Number five, please.
Agenda item number five, presentation and possible discussion of town fiscal impact report on residential build out.
Okay. Just bear with me for a second while I bring up my presentation on this one.
Oh, thank you all for having me.
Yeah. You don't mind.
Oh, excuse myself. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see here. So, again, just a kind of a short presentation for you this afternoon. One of the strategic plan items for our last strategic plan ending in June of 23 was to take a look at doing what we call a build-out analysis of the town and really try to determine what the financial impacts of that analysis are, what the fiscal impacts are. So this, again, this item was included in the 2023 strategic plan. Similar to the golf AUP, we really desired an independent analysis for this. We know that this is kind of a hot button issue, or could be perceived as a hot button issue with our residents. They're very interested in town development and growth, making sure that it's sustainable, that it makes sense. And so forth, as we found out even this past Wednesday night at the council meeting. And so we really wanted an independent analysis. We didn't want staff to kind of be accused of trying to craft an argument one way or the other as to, you know, well, we need, you know, this type of growth or whatever. We don't need any growth. You know, we really just wanted an independent view of this. So we brought in Applied Economics to perform that analysis for us. Certainly, it is based upon actual town data fed to Applied Economics from our Planning and Zoning Department, and consistent with the data that was used in the recently completed housing study. And then we, you know, the purpose here, I mentioned it here on the third bullet. It's intended really to be utilized as a high level planning document. Not really trying to get into a lot of details and specificity. Certainly, with a long range study like this, there are some big assumptions which I'll talk about and address in a couple slides. But really wanting to get kind of that high level perspective as to what the, you know, all else being equal, if nothing changes between now and town build out. What does the town look like? Are we sustainable? Are we not? Are we still structurally balanced, et cetera? And then that fourth bullet, not intended to be a replacement for, aligned perfectly with the town prepared 5-year forecast. So each year the town prepares a 5-year forecast for specific funds, our general fund, our highway fund, our community center fund, our capital fund. We take a look, and I think we include even our water utility. They do a five-year forecast as well. We take a look at the next 5 years and say, okay, what is this, you know, based upon, again, some assumptions there, but forecasting based upon sales tax growth and state revenue sharing and expenditure growth and so forth, what does this look like for the town over the next 5 years? Just really trying to be proactive and do a good job planning for the future. This is not, you know, I say this is not intended to be a replacement for or align perfectly with that town prepared five-year forecast. There was actually a lot more detail in this analysis that was performed. I don't want to say that we don't look at detail on the five-year forecast, but again, it was prepared by a different. Really a different source and based upon some different assumptions than what we utilize in the five-year forecast. I don't want to say one is better or preferable than the other. They're just different. So I just needed to note that that there are some there can be some differences there between our town prepared five-year forecast and what you'll see in the analysis here this afternoon. So again, purpose here, really address the following questions once all residential development is complete. And I have to highlight residential. We're not looking at commercial here. Residential, we have a much better sense of what's going to happen in the future than we do with commercial. Commercial can be very sporadic. It's very volatile. Can be, you know, there's all kinds of different forces at play there that can spur commercial growth or not. So we weren't really looking to include commercial development here. It's really trying to hone in on residential development and say, okay, what impact does that have financially on the town? Those questions, again, highlighted there in those two bullets underneath, is there a fiscal cliff in revenues? So when I started with the town almost four years ago now, this was something that the town manager at the time, you know, kept saying, we need to get prepared for this fiscal cliff. We need to get prepared for the fiscal cliff. When development, we're fully, developed from a residential standpoint, there's going to be this fiscal cliff. I'm like, okay. But, I started questioning that. I was like, okay, is there a fiscal cliff? Let's take a look at that. Let's question the question and see whether it's a valid question or not. And then does the town remain, question the assumption there. And then does the town remain structurally balanced from a town financial operations perspective? So again, as we're not looking at commercial typically the way we budget and account for commercial development and growth, typically a large portion of that goes towards capital. And so we really consider it one time because of its volatile nature and its hit or miss type of activity. And so it's not real consistent, can't really accurately planned upon. And so we typically consider that more one time, which, goes towards capital needs. Versus residential, we consider that, a little bit, we do a piece of that as one time, especially in high growth years. But generally speaking, most of commercial, we consider that as kind of more ongoing and supporting operational type needs of the town and expenditures. So that was really important as we look at this kind of this long term, and it's a 25-year model. Do we stay structurally balanced? That was really kind of a key question we were trying to answer there. And then, obviously, with a study like this, it's only as good as the council can utilize it to make decisions on future residential growth moving forward. Whether that growth is an annexation request, or it's a zoning request, a change in zoning like we had on this past Wednesday night. Council, can utilize this, hopefully, this type of study, and say, okay, based upon this model that we've had that's been reported to us, we can utilize this to make hopefully good decisions moving forward for the town. So that's really the purpose and what we honed in on as the intent of this study. So again, a lot of key assumptions utilized in this. I guess the first one is, inflation at 2.5%, you think 2.5%, we just came through 5 and 8 and 9 and more than that, actually, a period of time where inflation was just going off the rails. Again, think in terms of this being a 25-year analysis. And over the last, I looked at CPIW over the last 25 years and whatever, it was actually a little less than 2.5%. So we feel like 2.5% is reasonable. Yeah, you're going to have blips, periods of time where there is high inflation, but you're also going to have periods of time where there's low inflation. And so hopefully all of that kind of evens out. We felt like that was a reasonable assumption. We didn't include any future residential annexations, so we didn't really assume that there's going to be future annexations on the table. Really kind of looking at current inventory, current available lots that are developable in the town over the next 25 years. Again, no commercial development impact is included. No changes in zone usage or entitlements. So the couple items that came before town council this past Wednesday night that were not approved, that was not included or assumed to be included in this analysis. We just, again, kind of stuff that's already been decided upon. That's what we kind of went with. No change in state shared revenue formulas or distribution allocations. This certainly could, that's something that could change in the future, but we didn't make that type of assumption because that, again, that would be very difficult to predict as to, typically when there are changes like that, and there was actually recently a change over the last couple of years, the state made a change in the, we don't view that a future change is likely. Again, it's 25 years, so anything's possible, and it really depends upon the state economic climate and environment that they're in. But we didn't, we didn't want to make any assumptions there. Really, kind of utilizing current information there. The fiscal 23 budget is utilized as the baseline for future years, so that was kind of our starting point. I actually looked at the budget versus actual as we prepared the act for very, actual results very much aligned with our budget. So we feel like that is both in terms of the general fund and the highway fund, which are kind of the two operational funds that we looked at for this analysis, felt like that was in line and reasonable. No changes to existing town service levels are contemplated. So again, if the town wanted to add a fire district or some kind of major service level increase that we're not currently doing, that would have a significant impact. And we're really kind of make this model not as useful, I'll say. Or a service reduction. I'll utilize that as an example as well. If we were going to reduce service levels, farm out our municipal court, or do something like that, that none of those changes were contemplated. We really wanted to, again, kind of take a look at current service levels and model that out. Only the general fund and highway fund are included. Those are really kind of our primary operational funds for the town. Yes, we do have a community center fund and some other types of funds, but most of our other funds are really capital in nature. Our community center fund, even though it's special revenue fund, it pretty much is a self-supporting fund. So we didn't really feel like that was that needed to be included here. Really looking, again, primarily taking an strong operational perspective with this analysis. And then future capital needs are not contemplated. Just wanted to highlight that, really focused on operations and maintenance. I think Commissioner Garland, you had a question.
I do.
Yes.
On the assumption on the state shared. So are you assuming no impact from the income tax?
Yeah. So So fiscal year 23, that budget really, and I think that's where you'll see some differences with our five-year forecast versus the analysis here, because I think that's actually, there's strengths, both, you know, strengths and weaknesses with both models, but or both calculations. But our forecast for state shared revenue is that, you know, we're kind of in this year where it's going to be significantly higher. Our collections are significantly higher than they were last year, and last year they were pretty significantly higher than they were the prior year. What we anticipate moving forward is over the next 2 to 3 years, those are actually going to recede a little bit and then kind of level off and start growing again. This, you know, as we look at fiscal 23, as we look at this analysis, what it assumption was looking at fiscal 23, which was a pretty strong year, but definitely not as strong as what we're seeing this year with the change in calculations. And a change in the remittance percentage from 15% to 18%. So we're seeing this bump this year, and then we think that it's going to level off and actually decline a little bit next year and probably the next 2 or 3 years before it starts to grow again. But that is, you know, I think as we look at this report, I think it's probably, even though you're going to see some differences and some variances between actual and what the report shows, I think over time, over again that long 25-year horizon, I think we're going to pretty much hopefully end up in about the same spot over the next 5, 6, 7 years as things again start to grow again. So does that answer your question?
I think it does.
Yeah, we tried not to get
numbers.
We tried not to get too granular on that one. You know, understanding that state revenue sharing does have a major significant impact on our budget and on our operations, but we that one we didn't really get too granular on. We tried to kind of take more of a long-term perspective, and I believe again kind of that fiscal 23, I believe that's probably a pretty good launching point because we are seeing significant growth, which Wendy will, you know, she can talk about in the next item on our monthly financials, but
yeah. Probably get there.
Yeah. So, okay. So, with that said, we'll move down to kind of the key findings here. So, after 10 years, when 88% of residential development is expected to be absorbed, annual net impacts of new residential development declines to near zero. So, what we're saying there is, we're not, you know, the study doesn't show a fiscal cliff. So that answers that kind of that initial question. Is there just as we kind of completely build out, is there this massive drop in operational revenues? It doesn't exist according to the results of the study. You know, now the revenues do decline, but we've got a little bit of cushion there. So we're able to hopefully manage those declines moving forward, and there's, you know, certainly with 25 years, there's going to be steps that we can take and we'll be taking to proactively manage those revenue declines moving forward. Even in the current strategic plan, one of the items which the Budget Finance Commission will likely be a part of, as I've talked with Town Manager Wilkins, is taking a look at our revenue sources and streams, and is there anything additional that we can potentially add moving forward to kind of, and that, again, that's not assumed in this study, but those are discussions that we'll be having over the next year or two. Although total revenues and expenditures increase in each time period due to inflation and increase in total population of the town, the net difference between revenues and expenditures decreases over time. So again, the idea here is that over time, we've got some cushion between revenues and expenditures, and that cushion just, it declines, it degrades over time to where we get to kind of a, over the you know, 25 years from now, according to the model, to where we're just, we're basically break even, where revenues and expenditures are pretty much net with each other. The town remains structurally balanced. So again, that was kind of one of those key questions initially that we were trying to
answer. So what we're talking there was being structurally balanced, operating revenues meeting operating expenditures. However, it's cushion, and I say our cushion is operating revenues exceeding operating expenditures over time is eliminated, which does increase fiscal risk to the town. So right now, we're in a pretty strong financial position and condition. As I mentioned with the ACFR presentation, that position, that there's just additional risk to the extent that we don't have that cushion. You know, to the extent that we have more cushion, that mitigates risk against any sort of significant changes in the environment, even those changes that we can't anticipate. So that is something to be aware of. Total population of build-out estimated at 55,400. So we're at approximately a little over, I think, 48,500 residents. So we increased that to about 55,400, about, I don't know, 6,000-7,000 in population over that time frame. At build-out, just kind of some factoids here, our per capita revenue is estimated at $1,742. Our per capita expenditures are estimated at $1,738. So again, that margin is very, very tight between projected revenues and projected expenditures. Just to as a comparison there, fiscal year 24, which is the year that we're currently in, per capita revenue, again, it's a forecast, per capita revenue and expenditures are estimated at $1,066 and $1,024. So that margin is significantly greater currently than it is forecast to be well into the future. And then at build out, you know, this was kind of important for us to you know, just see, okay, per housing unit revenue, whether it's single family residential, multifamily or whatever, per housing unit revenue, what does that look like? The same type of calculation as per capita, but just looking at it from a housing unit standpoint. Estimated at $3,618 per housing unit, and then the expenditure is estimated at $3,608. So again, kind of a very tight cushion there. Fiscal year 24, you see it's $2,237 versus expenditures for revenues versus expenditures of $2,149. So that cushion, again, just to illustrate the type of what we're looking at in the future based upon some of these key assumptions, that cushion really does kind of close up and increase risk to the town from strictly an operational standpoint. With that, Sarah Murley is here. I can hopefully address most of your questions, but if there's something really technical that Commissioner Matt wants to ask, you know, because this is really in his wheelhouse here with his expertise really any of your commission, I just mentioned that kind of joking, but really if there are any questions about the study, hopefully you've had a chance to review it, but any questions that I can address or that anything more technical that Sarah needs to address. Yes.
And it's me again. So I understand. So you assumed a 2.5% increase in cost just on inflation, but there was no assumption to assume any increase in FTEs, particularly when you're increasing your population, like for additional police officers, headquarters, those types of things?
Yeah, Vice Chair, Commissioner Garland. Yeah, we actually did assume some FTE growth.
Okay.
And typically in our budget, we budget about 3 to 4 new positions per year. But specific to police, the police calculation was really different in terms of how the analysis dealt with police officers. And really what we're looking at there is looking at it on a call volume basis. And again, Sarah can correct me if I'm wrong, but we're looking at call volumes because call volumes really dictate staffing needs from a public safety perspective. And as the population grows, it's a very valid assumption to say, well, if your population grows, your call volume is going to grow right along with it. And so that's going to necessitate new public safety employees. And so we did look at that one a little bit differently. In terms of some of the other town departments, not as much. We feel like the growth, the growth that we're projecting to get up to 55.4, really a lot of that growth can be absorbed with current staffing levels. But police in particular, we did deal with that separately.
Okay.
It's a good question.
So then also within the highway revenue fund, if you're growing out, that means you're going to have to put in more infrastructure. If you put in more infrastructure, you're going to have to pay more roads and or build more sidewalks, whatever you're going to do that. So is 2.5 enough to cover that?
So, so Vice Chair Commissioner Garland, and I'm going to take a stab at this, and then again, Sarah can correct me if I'm wrong since she's the expert on this, but... As we looked at growth to get to, looked at all the growth, developable growth within town boundaries. And again, that's kind of where we were, where we kind of pigeonholed ourselves, not looking at any annexations or anything like that. The assumption was, well, first off, there's not really any new roads that are needed or planned to service, and if there are new roads that need to be servicing new developments, I think the assumption there was that those new roads would actually be, because a lot of our, as you're all well aware, a lot of our residential developments are HOA developments, and so, a lot of private streets and roads privately maintained and so forth. So we didn't really assume, number one, there's not a lot of new that is even possible within the town that would be necessary for constructing new roads and building new infrastructure. But number two, if there was, we would be working with the developer who would be putting those improvements in place. And again, we weren't really looking at this from a capital standpoint, really trying to look at, okay, from a more maintenance type standpoint, how do we, is this a reasonable assumption from a maintenance standpoint of maintaining town roads and infrastructure, bridges, and so forth? So did you have anything to add on that, Sarah?
Sure. Thank you. Just a minor clarification. So we did this in two pieces, and while you're seeing it added together, we looked at the existing development and what it costs to serve that as represented by what your current budget is, and then we looked at new development. And so for the new development, there are some cases exactly like Dave said where maybe you don't, like, you have enough capacity that you can cover an additional 6,500 residents coming in over a fairly long period of time. But there are other areas where expenditures are going to increase proportional to that new population. And so we modeled that new population and the revenues and expenditures separately from saying, here's what we have now, we're going to assume inflation, but it's different than what's new. And then we added those two back together at the end. With regard to streets in particular, we did not look at the capital cost of the streets, but we definitely looked at maintenance. And there is, in fact, about 1.2 lane miles of new streets, so really small, but... that would be needed for these particular parcels, because we were looking at this at a parcel level, to develop. And that was provided by the town. Those aren't my estimates. But I know what it's costing to maintain the road miles that you have, and so we can add those that additional amount of lane miles for and additional in maintenance costs associated with that.
Any other questions, comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 6, presentation and possible discussion of the town fiscal year 2023-2024 financial update through November 2023.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to bring these in front of you. We have shifted to quarterly PowerPoint presentations per commission direction, so we don't have an actual formal PowerPoint to present to you this evening, but we can walk through the town council report and kind of hit the highlights, and then we'll see if you have any questions. Things are still looking great through November. Revenues and expenditures are both performing well compared to budget. In the general fund, we've collected about 42% of our revenues now, while our uses are at about 37% through November. We can talk about some of our revenue categories. Our local sales tax is up 2%. That doesn't sound very exciting, but we did budget a slight decline in that revenue source. So those are actually, our year-end estimate is still above budget just because of that conservative nature that we programmed into that revenue source. You can see the state shared revenues, obviously the income tax that Mr. Gephardt talked about, that's really driving most of our year-over-year increase. But again, that is one time. We understand it's one time, and we have forecasted those declines into the next couple of years that we're going to see in that particular revenue source. Our other revenue sources are performing well. When we come back in December, we'll have revised estimates for both our revenues and our uses. Interest income, we know in particular, we're probably going to be increasing those year-end estimates. Those are looking quite positive for our funds through November. Uses, nothing to report of note in the general fund, still tracking there with our separate categories. The transfers out, we've done our debt service transfer, and then we are doing our transfers to the capital fund quarterly, as we've mentioned. So right now through November, in the general fund, revenues exceed uses by about $755,000. We had budgeted to use about $5.2 million in fund balance, and based on some of our estimates thus far that we prepared through the first quarter, looking at about $3.1 to draw down on our balance in the general fund. And again, planned for the fiscal year. Things pretty vanilla in the highway fund. Our HERF revenues, our gas tax revenues are still looking fine. We're at just under 40% through November. So there is really not a whole lot of variance in the highway fund. Interest income, I'd mentioned that. That's looking quite positive, and we had already revised the year-end estimate in that fund accordingly. But as far as our expenditures, still tracking. The transfer in, you may recall, that's a budgeted transfer from the capital fund for some of the capital projects, the roadway capital projects that are in need of funding this fiscal year. So, again, that will probably be done at fiscal year end once we have the rest of the performance of the fund finalized, and then we'll determine what that transfer needs to be to keep that fund balanced. So change in fund balance for the highway fund. Excess, we've got a surplus there through November of about $442,000, and we are planning to use about $500,000 in fund balance for the highway fund. Things are still looking positive in the community center fund. We should be getting our December financials from our contractors any day now, and we have asked them to update their year-end estimates. So we are expecting, based on what we've seen with their revenues so far, they will probably be bumping up those year-end estimates because those are looking quite positive through November and actually through the fiscal year so far in previous months. Those are trending nicely. Same with the town operating revenues. You can see we have already adjusted those year-end estimates. Our member dues are looking good. We continue to get a lot of growth in our camp classes and programming over at the community center. So we had previously revised that year-end estimate. We'll continue to track those. Uses, we'll be updating those estimates as well when the contractor provides us with our revised year-end revenue estimates. They will do that for expenditures as well. So we do know that based on weather primarily, but TEP also had a rate increase this year. So the contractor has had some utility increases. I think it's been overall a drier year than it was last year. So so you can see their expenditures are up year over year, but we'll get those estimates from them. And again, we are expecting some positive signs there when those come out. So again, Community Center Fund through November. We've drawn about $1.5 million in fund balance. But again, we've talked about this previously. We posted our entire budgeted transfer to the debt service fund for the debt service that this fund covers. We posted that in July. You know, that's the same time that golf is slow. And so right now there's a slight negative balance in the fund, but we are expecting to recover that at year end and expecting to use about $275,000 in fund balance in the community center fund. So you can see our estimated ending fund balance of about $735,000. Let me see if there's anything else specific that I wanted to mention. Again, we'll jump back to the golf contractor real quick. We've got a deficit spend, planned deficit spend. Their budget through November was to spend about $718,000, and we're actually sitting about $466,000. So some positive signs there, and we'll look forward to their revised numbers for December. And then again, everything else tracking where we would expect it to be. Our local sales tax, I did want to mention some of the areas where we continue to see growth. So retail is down a little bit, about half a percent through November. That's probably inflation peeling back a little bit, but maybe also some cutbacks by consumers. Construction contracting is down, but again, we did budget about 16.5% decline there for that revenue source. But our restaurant and bars and our remote seller category, so our online sales, those are still doing quite well for the fiscal year. So those have been kind of our shining stars this year, if you will. So again, we will come back in December. We'll have a formal PowerPoint. And again, we update our year-end estimates quarterly. So those will be the latest and greatest numbers for you that we'll have in the mid-year financials. And those will include our enterprise funds as well, our water utility fund and our stormwater fund. So, and with that, we'll take any questions you might have.
I just have one. So I saw that the work is underway for the ADA over at the community center.
Yes.
Is that expected to be fully expended out in this fiscal period, or are you expecting it to run into next year?
I believe it's going to be complete this fiscal year, if I'm not mistaken.
October? I believe it's completed in October.
October. Okay, okay. I apologize.
The next fiscal year. So, yes. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
I think it's, you know, obviously it needs to be planned time-wise to be, you know, less disruption or minimal disruption. It's not going to be possible to entirely avoid that, but yes, underway. It's exciting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Congratulations, Vice Chair. Thank you for volunteering. Appreciate you taking the lead of the meeting, maybe unexpectedly. Good job. And to our new commissioners, welcome. We appreciate your service, and this is an important commission to the Tahoma Council, to our residents, and so we certainly value the work that you do. I encourage you, if you haven't, to attend a town council meeting on occasion, or to check in virtually. I think it will help you to provide some insight as to those meetings and how you contribute to our town council meetings, and also give you, you know, just a flavor of how those function. And with that, our next upcoming meeting, I think, as Mr. Gephardt mentioned, is February 7th. So on that agenda, we have a couple presentations. The town has had a nice partnership with the Children's Museum for a number of years. There's been a relatively recent change where they're now housed at Tohono O'Toole. It's been incredibly successful partnership, and it's increased, I believe, membership at Tohono O'Toole. It certainly increased the number of children and families that go to Tohono O'Toole. So it's been a very positive partnership. And so Hillary will be, who's the executive director, she'll be making a report. We'll also receive a report updating us on Your Voice, Our Future, general plan from Melanie Sims. which I think would be of interest to you. And then there's been some discussion in this meeting regarding golf. And at our February 7th meeting, we'll be reviewing the Push Ridge Golf Course, its operations and maintenance and future capital needs. So it may be of interest to you to view that discussion. And then there'll be a study session to follow a development that's in the Big Wash area where there's been some subsidence issues. And so the council will be receiving an update. So that's February 7th. And again, I welcome you to participate, but thank you. I appreciate being able to be a part of your meeting today.
Thank you, Mayor.
Vice Chair, back to you.
Thank you. If nobody has anything else for adjournment?
Motion for adjournment. So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, adjournment at 5:24 p.m. Thank
all
you.
Those in favor?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Aye.